Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. 47 years ago today, President John F. Kennedy was assassinated, and over the course of the 7 weeks after that, some 800,000 letters of condolence were sent to his widow, Jacqueline Kennedy. Over the course of the next 2 years, roughly, that number grew to 1.5 million letters, and they were left basically untouched until now. Joining us today is Ellen Fitzpatrick. She's historian and author of, among other things, Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation. That book is out now, and Ellen is with us as well. Ellen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. Nice to be here.
Let's hear a clip of Jacqueline Kennedy thanking the public for those letters.
I want to take this opportunity to express my appreciation for the hundreds of thousands of messages, nearly 800,000 in all, which my children and I have received over the past few weeks. The knowledge of the affection in which my husband was held by all of you has sustained me, and the warmth of these tributes is something I shall never forget.
You remember that when she made that statement, Ellen?
I do, and it was what came into my mind as I was going down to the Kennedy Library to do research on an entirely different book. And as part of that book, I was trying to get a sense of how Americans saw President Kennedy in his own time. And I remembered that appearance of Mrs. Kennedy and her thanking the public for the condolence letters. In the next sentence or so of that clip, she said that the letters would be kept in the Kennedy Library so that future generations would know how much her husband had meant to the American people. So when I went to the library, I asked if they had any of the letters, and that's how the project began.
Many of them probably, but many of the ones I read from the book, there's about 250 in the book that you quote directly or quote completely. It was amazing the level of familiarity they seemed to feel for her.
Yes. President and Mrs. Kennedy were really the first kind of television first family and their two children. And they were also of an age, President Kennedy, of course, the youngest man ever elected to the presidency, the first president born in the 20th century. They were of an age that they were raising their children at a time when the parents of the baby boom generation were raising the baby boomers. And there was a very strong identification on the part of many people in America with this young family, very telegenic, very attractive, and the new media of television following all of their exploits in great detail. And all of this was followed with avid interest by many Americans.
It was so sweet. One of the letter writers went on to talk about her own family and said, you know, she left her phone number and said, if you feel like talking.
Yes.
And it was so sweet.
Oh, there were so many letters in which people really, as one does in a condolence letter to a close friend, tries to express one's grief and shared sense of loss, but also to extend a helping hand. And there was a letter from a woman who really didn't have much in the way of resources, who was offering Mrs. Kennedy some furniture when she heard that she would be moving out of the White House. People who invited her to come over for a cup of coffee, or if she wanted to get away from it all, to visit their house and stay with them for a while to get out of the glare of publicity and so forth. They're very, very generous sentiments.
My guest is Ellen Fitzpatrick, historian and author. We're talking about her new book, Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation, on this, the 47th, for lack of a better word, anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. If you have a question or comment for Ellen, and if you wrote one of those letters or somebody who did, there were 1.5 million after 2 years. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, before the program began, Ellen, you and I were talking about whether this would be possible in this day and age if something like this could happen again.
Well, in the horrible event that it did happen, I think that the handwritten letter has become kind of an artifact of the past. It is something that today, in the age of, you know, Twitter and email and all the new forms of information technology, very few people write letters anymore, younger people especially. And I can only imagine that there might be a flood of you know, messages, but whether they would take the form of handwritten letters that were preserved very painstakingly by the Kennedy Library, at least some of them were, and all of them, by the way, acknowledged by a staff of literally thousands of volunteers. Mrs. Kennedy felt strongly that all of these letters should be acknowledged.
When you were reading them at the library, were you seeing the originals or copies of the original? You were seeing the originals.
Yes, and that was very touching, Anne, because, you know, these, as a physical artifact, a letter tells you something, and the handwriting, the spelling, the stationery, many of the people who wrote were, most of the people whose letters I focused on were very so-called average Americans. Mm-hmm. There were many, many letters from poor people, in fact. But people who, if there was one line that was commonly written, it was, "I am a nobody from nowhere."
Yeah.
And so you learned something about the pictures they enclosed, about the way they expressed themselves. And what came across to me so powerfully was the incredible eloquence of these so-called ordinary people who were really not ordinary at all.
Well, even people who would apologize for their third grade education and maybe their spelling wasn't all right, but it was incredibly eloquent, as you put it.
Yes, and full of wisdom.
Yeah.
And thoughtful commentary about, to me as a historian, the letters were interesting because they provided a kind of snapshot of the American people in a moment of historical cataclysm, reflecting about how they saw the country, the presidency, the issues of their times, and certainly their views of President Kennedy.
My guest is Ellen Fitzpatrick. She's author of Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation. That's what we're talking about right now. And Mike, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks again for another incredibly perfectly timed program, Anne. Thanks for having
us.
That's great. I'm only sorry that I'm sitting here in my stupid car driving to work rather than I was just on the phone with my best friend Liz in Mexico talking about where I was the day that Kennedy was assassinated. Mm. And even more interesting than that, it was 2 weeks ago that I actually hung on the wall in my, I'm a big family person and I save all sorts of family junk and stuff, and my house is littered with letters and stuff. And I just hung a great letter from Jacqueline Kennedy to a woman. I was raised by two women, my actual mother and an African-American woman growing up in Washington, D.C., as I did. My father had a barn. We had a woman that helped raise me, and her church group offered to help Jacqueline Kennedy respond to all the many condolence letters. So her church group, which she was one of the leadership people of, helped Jacqueline Kennedy by sending out, you know, thank you notes. And in return, she received this wonderful letter, and that's why I wish I was home to be able to read it. Mm. It was so special, from Jacqueline Kennedy thanking her for the effort that she and her church made, you know, on such a solemn occasion. And along with that letter, she sent a picture of she and President Kennedy, which I've also framed and put up next to the letter, and it holds very dear to me because this woman just passed away just a few years ago. But it's an incredible memory because, you know, I can remember where I was the moment it took place, and I remember Sylvia immediately saying, you know, we've got to do something. So and she immediately responded with this. I don't know whether your guest knows of people who, and I just tuned the show in, so I apologize if this was discussed, people who responded by helping Jacqueline Kennedy respond to the millions of condolences.
Ellen, I know you had to contact everybody before you printed the letters in the book, but did you ever contact any of the people who worked for her and did those kind of things?
I have since heard from them since the book has been published and have actually met with some of the letter openers. That's a whole new population of people that were involved in the project in a sense. And yes, I have met some of these folks, and they're far flung. and very interesting people who have wonderful observations about what they saw. As your caller points out, there were people who, in their letters, asked for photographs of the Kennedys, or some people wanted mass cards. And these, I was just struck by hearing his comment that this woman received a photograph, because that the letter writers themselves also often received photographs when they asked for them. So the people who volunteered to respond to these many, many letters did a wonderful service, and there are many people who saved those response cards and, you know, keep them today.
Thank you, Mike, for your call.
Ann, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Stu, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Just wanted to say I've been entwined with the anniversary of his death because it happened on my first birthday, but when we were helping my in-laws go through some things in the basement, we came across, you know, the thank you letter from Mrs. Kennedy to my mother-in-law, who had been one of those people who had written, you know, the response cards acknowledging the letters of condolence. And we have it. The envelope is trimmed in black.
Yep.
And there's a lovely little note in it. And I had said to my mother-in-law, you know, did you vote for Kennedy? And she, no, I voted for Nixon. your father-in-law voted for Kennedy, but she said it was a time when there was no political division, there were no political parties. She said everybody came together and did what needed to be done because it was the right thing to do. And I treasure that letter.
It makes me wonder, Ellen, Stu brings up a really good point. Not only would maybe in our generation respond differently technologically, but do you think people would respond the same way given the polarized nature of our politics these days?
Well, you know, it's easy to, your caller is absolutely right that the grief cut across political party and ideology. There are many letters from Republicans.
Right.
There are many people saying that they had voted against Kennedy. We're looking forward to voting against him again in 1964, and yet who still felt very devastated by this event. So, you know, I would say that in the early 1960s, it's easy to romanticize this time. It was still an age of segregation in our society. There were bitter divisions over the emerging civil rights legislation that Kennedy was proposing and the civil rights activism of the period and, you know, other conflicts as well. So there were divisions in American society then as well that were overcome, and I certainly would like to think that Americans as a people still hold some degree of reverence for the office of the presidency and the man who holds it.
Stu, thanks for the call. And Stu?
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. We have to take a short break. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Ellen Fitzpatrick, author of Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, full body scanners and deep pat downs have Americans pushing back over the indignities of airport security. We'll look at the latest. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins this afternoon at 1 o'clock right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. 65 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20 this morning. A slight chance of rain this afternoon, cloudy skies and a high of 69 degrees. It's going to be windy at times today as well. Rain showers are likely tonight, possibly a thunderstorm overnight, a low of 55 degrees. For Tuesday, morning rain likely and then temperatures falling to around 46 by 5 o'clock tomorrow. Tuesday night, clear skies and a cold night with a low of 27 degrees. All Sites continues on to WOS UA20 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. My guest is Ellen Fitzpatrick. She's author of Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation. If you have a story or about that time, if you have a question for Ellen, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ellen, is there a letter in particular that struck you in this anthology?
Boy, every single letter in it, Anne, had a big impact on me. I read 15,000 letters, which is the number of letters that are still extant in the collection. The National Archives actually only kept about 15,000 letters from Americans. There's a lot more foreign mail, and I read all of them. So each letter in the book was something that meant a lot to me, but there are some that really stand out. Would you like me to read a portion of one?
I would love that.
Okay, this letter I find very, very powerful. Dear Mrs. Kennedy, I wish to extend to you and the children my condolences. Children increase the cares of life, but they do help to mitigate the remembrance of death. We are told that a good key is necessary to enter paradise. The president, following the guidelines of his church, possessed this key. Heaven, it seems, calls its favorites early. In the president, I felt that I had known a whole man. It is a rare experience, but always an illuminating and ennobling one. It costs so much to be a full human being that there are very few who have the enlightenment or the courage to pay the price. The lights of the prison have gone out now. In this, the quiet time, I can't help but feel that my thoughts and the thoughts of my countrymen will ever reach out to that light on an Arlington hillside for sustenance, how far that little light throws his beam. And that's from a inmate in a federal penitentiary in Atlanta, Georgia.
Wow. I remember reading that. There were other letters from other inmates.
Yes. There's one from a fellow in Chicago who wrote a poem to Mrs. Kennedy, and at the end of it he says something to the effect that your little lady Caroline, all I can say, she's a darling. The world loves her madly. You have your children, which you can be very proud of. If you notice, my tribute to your husband isn't fancy work, yet it is written from the very depths of my heart. I am no one special, just an inmate of Illinois.
614-292-8513 to join the conversation. Anne, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Anne.
Hello?
Hi, Anne. You're on the air.
My name is Linda. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I wasn't know you were trying to meet. Well, I just joined the, I got in the car a few minutes ago, and I heard you talking about this, and I just wanted to comment. I'm writing a book for my children, you know, about my life and history and things mm-hmm. like that. And I came to the part, I was in my 20s when I had my first child, and I came to that part, and I, of course, wrote about what happened during those 3 days. And, you know, I thought to myself, and I relived it again, life stood still for 3 days. And I called my friends, and I said, and of various political parties, and said, did your life stand still during those 3-4 days? And almost all of them said yes. And I'm wondering if 9/11 had maybe the same effect on younger people as that death did upon those of us who were alive during that period, because it seemed like nothing moved. And everything that I saw on TV is just in my head, mm-hmm. you know? But it's just amazing, you know, to know that most people who were alive during that period, no matter what the political things that were going, they still stood still for a while. And it just, I just love that letter you just read from that other, you know, that she just read. That was wonderful.
From the inmate.
So I just wanted to share, you know, I don't think my kids, that's the reason I wanted to share this in my book, because I don't know if anything has had an impact on our children maybe 9/11 like that did upon those of us who were over 60.
Ellen, how do you think, as an historian, the impact of something like 9/11 would differ from something like the assassination of JFK?
Well, I think, one, there's no question that 9/11 was just incredibly powerful, had an incredibly powerful impact on Americans who lived through it. I think the thing about the Kennedy assassination is that it came almost at a time when at least the sort of nature of the country itself then, I think we were less inured, we were more inured to violence then. That is, after the Kennedy assassination, of course, came the assassination of Martin Luther King, the assassination of Robert Kennedy, the urban riots, the violence of the 1960s, of the Vietnam War, and so on and so on. The early 1960s was a very different time in our country, and this was an extraordinarily shocking event. The studies that have been done show that of Americans who lived through this event, this is their most powerful memory. And the second in the list is the bombing at Pearl Harbor for Americans who were old enough to remember that. So, yes, I think 9/11 will certainly have that kind of lasting, engraved quality of memory in the minds of those who lived through it. And this did as well.
Thanks, Linda, for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 614-292-8513. Do you have a story to tell about that 3 days? And maybe you know about somebody who wrote a letter or received an acknowledgement. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, and we'd like to hear your story. You were talking about a more innocent time, less violence. I wonder if there also was something about having it all focused on this one person versus 3,000 people. I think for me, with 9/11, and for maybe a lot of people, some of the most moving parts about that experience was when the news reports would focus on the people who died.
Well, that's a very astute comment. I mean, one of the things that comes across in these letters, and again, I would note that in many ways, Kennedy was really our first television president. It was what helped catapult him to the presidency after all his success with this new media. And there's a sense as you read these letters in which Americans felt that they knew this man. Since his death, we've learned a lot of things that we didn't know about him. But at the time that people were writing, many, many people described it as though they said they felt as if there had been a death in their own family.
Mm-hmm.
And they equated it to the loss of a spouse, the loss of a parent, the loss of a son, and recounted similar losses in their own lives.
It was interesting that some of the letters were actually sent to the children.
Yes. Yes, a few letters were sent directly to the children. And there was clearly, as you read through them, you get the sense of the delight that many Americans took. The Kennedys had the youngest children in the White House of any presidential couple in the 20th century. And there was President Kennedy liked having news coverage of them, his wife less so, but we saw lots of pictures of them, and people felt a great deal of affection for these children, and also to see them orphaned, to have lost their fathers. And orphaned is the wrong word. Many people also said how grateful they were that Mrs. Kennedy's life had been spared.
Marcia, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Marcia.
Hi. I was a freshman in college when President Kennedy was assassinated, and there was a guy in our class who had a Volkswagen, and he said he was going to drive to Washington to view the president's body, which was lying in state under the Capitol Rotunda. And if anybody would pay him $6, we could ride along. And seven of us piled into his Volkswagen and left West Virginia at about 11 o'clock at night. And we arrived in Washington at 6 in the morning and parked the car. I think we parked in Georgia, and we walked forever. It was very cold, but very crisp and beautiful, and we finally got to the rotunda, and we were able to pass by his flag-draped casket, and it really was a seminal moment in my life. And while we were standing in line forever, this crowd who was so reverent, and I mean, there was no pushing, no shoving, no nothing. It was just something. People broke into Battle Hymn of the Republic and singing, and it was just beautiful and awe-inspiring. And I am now age 65, and I will never. It was. A life-changing experience for me. And the older I become, the more awesome, what an overused word, but I mean, it becomes that way. And Miss Fitzpatrick, I love the sounds of your book, and I really would love to receive it at holiday time, give it at holiday time. It sounds wonderful.
Thank you, Marcia.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, this is a wonderful comment from your caller. It raises a couple of wonderful themes. One is the affection that many West Virginians had. There's a whole section of letters in the book from West Virginians.
Right.
Kennedy, of course, had campaigned in the West Virginia primary.
The war on poverty, didn't it?
It was a turning point.
Yeah.
For his campaign in 1960, because many people believed that the overwhelmingly white and Protestant population of the state would never vote for a Roman Catholic, and the West Virginians proved them wrong. So a great deal of grief came out of there. And there's also a letter in the book that describes exactly the scene that your caller just gave of people who were in the line of waiting to get into the Capitol Rotunda, and who waited in line, some of them for 10 hours or more, and he describes the singing and how he talks about, you know, a group of people would start singing, and then when they finished, a group in the block ahead or the block behind would pick up the song that they sang, America the Beautiful. And he says it was wonderful to be part of such a spontaneous demonstration of love and respect for our fallen leader.
614-292-8513 if you would like to join the conversation with Ellen Fitzpatrick. She's author of Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation. And Stanley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, this is Stanley Brock. I'd just like to, am I on the air now?
You're on the air now, yep.
Okay, yeah, I remember as a young boy in Dunlapsville, Indiana, I was 14 year old when we got the news that the president had been shot. And I was a young kid, and I affect the whole classroom. Like I said, we was out to recess. We came in, and it was on the air that the President Kennedy had been assassinated. And I thought, my gosh, what has this country has come to, you know, as a young boy. And we were so saddened that day. And the whole classroom and the whole school, we were just froze, you know. And I remember... after school, we came home, and my mom and dad, we was all glued to the TV watching it. And, you know, they were so sad in theirself, you know, and my whole generation, at that time was, seemed like that was the whole conversation, was the tragedy that happened to our nation. And I remember as I grew older, it was still in my heart. And I'm 62 years old. I was 14 then.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember after I got married, I told my wife, I said, someday when I get the money and I get the good automobile, I'm going to Washington, D.C. To see where all this has happened at. You know, I mean, the Capitol building, because I remember seeing the funeral session, you know, going down the street, the horse carrying the casket and everything. And I remember as a young kid, still in my memory to this day, watching that on TV, and I said, this must be the century thing that happened to our nation. I mean, there's nothing any worse could happen to America, I don't think, than losing a president. And other than 9/11 was a tragedy, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember telling my wife, I said, someday I'm going to go get to Washington, D.C., and I'm going to go up and see. And we went, we had the opportunity, I think it was in the 80s, 1979 or 80, we went there on vacation, and we went to Arlington Cemetery. And I remember going up there and looking at the flame, and I was just astonished. I mean, I was just froze, I should say, saddened. But stood there and tears ran down my face after all those years had passed.
Yeah.
And till this day, I watched it. The news last night about the where it happened in Dallas, the assassination plot and everything. And I'm just froze to the TV. Anything that comes out about that, you know. And after all those years, what I'm trying to say is still heart wrenching to me, you know, as a citizen of the United States. And Kennedy was then later on his brother got killed in 68, and
right.
I said, my gosh, what is this world coming to, you know?
Yeah.
And
Stanley, thanks a lot for your call.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. We have to take a break real quick, but Ellen, you must get a lot of this sort of response.
I do, and there's a letter in the collection from a young boy who says, what happened in Dallas hurt me so bad, as young as I am, it will be buried with me. Something got killed in my soul.
Yeah, the letters from the kids, we can talk about that when we return. My guest, Ellen Fitzpatrick, author of Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation. You can join the conversation if you dial 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And you can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, where we are in the so-called war on cancer, we talk with oncologist Siddhartha Mukherjee, author of the new book, The Emperor of All Maladies, A Biography of Cancer. He'll explain how cancer therapies are evolving as scientists learn more about the nature of cancer cells. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Wednesday at 8 p.m. on WOSU TV, join us for an inside look at the work of Pete Souza, President Obama's chief White House photographer. National Geographic and PBS follow Souza inside the Obama White House, aboard Air Force One, backstage at the State of the Union, and into the heart of the West Wing. It's a behind-the-scenes look at the everyday grit of the American presidency and a chance to see what it's like to cover the most powerful man in the world for history. Watch The President's Photographer Wednesday night at 8 on WOSU TV. 65 degrees in downtown Columbus, a slight chance of rain throughout the day, otherwise cloudy skies, a high of 69. Rain showers are likely tonight, possibly a thunderstorm, and a low of 55 degrees. And then temperatures falling on Tuesday, and morning rain likely on Tuesday as well. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. My guest is Ellen Fitzpatrick. She's author of Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation. It was 47 years ago today that President John F. Kennedy was assassinated. And that's what this book is about. It's about the condolence letters that were sent to Jacqueline Kennedy after her husband was killed. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email now from a listener. I was in sixth grade when Kennedy was assassinated. I do remember writing a letter, getting back a black bordered card and a photograph of the family, including the two kids, which seemed to be post-church attendance, since Jackie was wearing a mantilla. I thought this was after the assassination, but it doesn't seem like the kind of photo that would be sent after a death. I thought maybe I'd written after the miscarriage of their third child. Would your guest have any insight, especially about the photograph? So I guess it was the entire family.
Yes, that was a photograph that was sent out by the volunteers. It's a picture of the Kennedys leaving church in Palm Beach. I think it was in Easter of 1963. And it's a wonderful photograph of the entire family. That's one of the photographs that was sent out. But there was a great deal of condolence mail that came in August of 1963 when the Kennedys lost their son, Patrick, who mm-hmm. was born and who died within a few days. And it may be that your caller wrote then and received that very same photograph. Could be. I would not know, but there are many of those letters are in the library as well.
Why? How did you decide which letters to include?
That was hard, Anne, because as I said, I read about 15,000
right.
of them, and I thought 3,000 of them were worthy of publication. I was pretty sure my editor wasn't going to permit that, so I had to really think hard about what to include. And what I was most interested in were letters that in some ways would give Americans a sense of the range of reaction. The book is actually divided into three parts, and the first section of it is about November 22nd, people
right.
hearing the news. And I wanted to show how this news spread like wildfire across the country. So there are letters from people of all different stations of life and all different circumstances, from people who were in the hospital, people who were having children that day, people who had birthdays, as your caller did, a cab driver, a postman, that sort of thing.
It was Go ahead.
I'm sorry. There were letters that in which the writers reflected on the social and political issues of their time and their views of the presidency, and I included a sample of those. And then finally, letters in which people described their own sense of loss and as reflected in other losses that they had sustained in their lives. So letters that well illustrated those three themes really guided me in my selection.
In the first section, it was interesting and eerie to read the letters from people who had just heard the news that the president had been shot, and then while they're writing the letter, they get the news that he has died.
Yes,
and they reflect that in their letter.
Yes, one of the very first letters in the book is a letter of that type, in which the man says, "Even as I write this letter, my hand, my body is trembling at the terrible incident of this afternoon. I am watching the CBS TV news report. No official word is yet." And then he hears the news, and he says, "Good God, help us, help us. It's a terrible thing to live through. I can't go on writing now. It's too much. My prayers are with you and those involved."
Of course, some of the most amazing letters were from the children.
They're wonderful letters from children in the book and in the larger collection. in part because they're so immediate and visceral in their response, but also because they too were just so eloquent and their messages were so powerful. There's a letter from an 11-year-old boy who wrote only a few lines, and he said, "Dear Mrs. Kennedy, I hope the words I wrote last year in fifth grade for Robert Frost will express my feeling and provide an epitaph for our late president." And then he put his little poem, "The miles are gone, the promises were kept, I heard the news, I sat, I wept." That was from an 11-year-old boy.
The way you printed the letters, of course, just in the regular typeface of the book, but on the insides of each cover, you had the originals printed, or some of them.
Yes.
How did you decide which of those? Because I really liked that.
Yeah, they're. I wanted to show again the sort of range of examples: the handwriting, the stationery, the ink. The photographs that some people included of themselves. There were mm-hmm. quite a few children who were named after the Kennedys,
right.
who were born in the aftermath of the assassination, and many parents very proudly included photographs of these babies. There were so many of them, in fact, that one of the ones that I put in the book, I had to decide who to pick, mm-hmm. and there were two adorable twins, a boy and a girl, the Watson babies, who were named after President and Mrs. Kennedy, Jack and Jacqueline Watson. And as I was following up and trying to find out what happened to these folks, I was saddened to learn that their father was killed 2 years later in Vietnam.
When you contacted people to print the letters, what kind of reactions did you get?
Well, that was an amazing experience, Anne. I mean, it was necessitated by U.S. copyright law, in which, when a letter really belongs to the letter owner, or the letter writer, excuse me, or to his or her kin for some 70-plus years. And so I had to find these folks in order to publish their letters. And what was amazing, a lot of the letter writers had passed away who were adults, but it was a wonderful thing to be able to call these people's children and say, "I think I have a letter that your mother wrote to Jacqueline Kennedy in 1963 after President Kennedy was assassinated." And most of them had no idea that their parent had written the letter. And so they were very, very moved to learn of this. And often the letter writers would talk about their own children. So I really felt at times that it was great to be able to give this back to the families of the letter writers. Most people were very glad and to hear of the letters and were wonderfully generous in allowing their publication.
A few did decline, though. Why?
Mm-hmm. Well, there was one fellow who said that he was a very conservative Republican, and that all he had really said in his letter was how sorry he was that the president had been assassinated, but he said if any of his friends knew that he had written a letter to Jacqueline Kennedy, he would never be able to live it down. So that was one response I got. Another man felt, excuse me, that it was just simply too personal, and he wanted to keep it to himself, and I understood that. There was someone else who was worried about their mother had written a letter and talked about she was from the South, and she talked about the Ku Klux Klan and how it was really a scary place to be. They were Catholics. They were white, but they were Catholics. And she talked about the violence of the Ku Klux Klan and so forth. All these many years later, she's passed away, but her family was very nervous about having their identity exposed.
One was from an 11-year-old girl who apparently had written every week for 6 months after the president was killed. How did you know that? that she had done? Because there was only one letter left.
Yes. I met her, and she told me so. She's a wonderful woman, Jane Dryden, who lives in Texas. And when I went to Texas, to Austin, to talk about the book, I had an opportunity to meet her and her family. And, yes, there was only one of the letters in the collection, but she had written regularly, she told me.
The kids, the way they spoke in their letters, you mentioned earlier the 11-year-old quoting Robert Frost. Their level of expression, I don't know if these were exceptional children or not.
Well, they were very thoughtful kids. One of the other people that I was very pleased to get to meet was a 14-year-old boy who had been standing on the motorcade route on November 22nd, and he said, I know the grief you bear. I bear the same grief. I am a Dallasite. I saw you yesterday. I hope to see you again. I saw Mr. Kennedy yesterday. I'll never see him again. I'm very disturbed because I saw him a mere 2 minutes before that fatal shot was fired. I couldn't believe it when I heard it over the radio 5 minutes later. I felt like I was in a daze. To Dallas, time has halted. Everyone is shocked and disturbed. My prayers to you, a sympathetic, prayerful, and disturbed Dallasite, Tommy Smith, age 14. This little boy bought the card with his own money and acquired a stamp and sent it off, and he's now a man in his 60s who I had the privilege of meeting when I went to Texas.
It felt like that, a privilege to meet these folks?
Oh, yes. The letter writers themselves really are wonderful, wonderful people. And it has really been very moving to, as a historian, I rarely get the opportunity to interact with any of the subjects of my research.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them have passed away, but in this case I did, and it was a great, great privilege.
One of the letter writers said she wasn't sure if she was already headed in the trajectory of, I think, social work that she eventually landed in, but that she believes that. And so when she heard the letter and read, you know, when you read the letter to her or she saw a copy of it, she had not remembered writing what she had written about how she had promised to pledge the rest of her life to do good things in his name.
Yes, that was from Barbara Reimer, who's the dean of the School of Public Health.
That's
at the University of North Carolina, and a very, very distinguished academic, a professor, and someone who's been very committed to the whole field of public health. And, yes, she... There are a lot of letter writers who felt, younger people who felt, that this event really shaped the direction of their lives from that moment forward. That was, Kennedy's presidency itself had greatly inspired a lot of young people who identified with him. It's funny how many generations claimed Kennedy. The World War II veterans claimed him, and yet very young children claimed him as well.
Some were old enough to recall the assassinations of other presidents.
Yes, that was a remarkable thing. There is one letter in the book from a man who was 99 years old and who had been alive for the assassinations of all four presidents, which was an incredible thing.
So, and Abraham Lincoln, Garfield, McKinley,
and Kennedy.
That's right.
And he, his birthday was on November 22nd. And so he wrote a condolence letter. There's also a wonderful letter in the book from a member of the Garfield family,
yes.
President Garfield's
grandson,
family.
Right.
Yes, and he describes the impact that this event had on the Garfield family, and he makes the comment that they call it an assassination. He uses words to the effect that they call it an assassination, which is really a dry euphemism for the outright murder of a family member. That is... how it felt to them.
One of the letters was from General MacArthur.
This was his great-grandson, by the way, Rudolph Garfield.
Yes,
Yes, there was a telegram from MacArthur. That was interesting because John F. Kennedy wasn't a big fan of MacArthur's, like many younger men in the Navy. But MacArthur wrote a very, very powerful note to Mrs. Kennedy as well, expressing, you know, just how he felt something really had been killed inside of him.
And he sent it via a telegram, and I was wondering, did most of the letters obviously arrived in envelopes through the regular mail, but were telegrams, were there other?
Oh, yes. There are stacks of telegrams. Mm-hmm. There are many, many telegrams that, came to the White House, and his was one. There's a collection of VIP mail that was separated out from the rest of the collection in a special box and so forth. But I found that the letters from famous people to me were far less compelling and less interesting historically than the letters from so-called ordinary Americans, who turned out not to be so ordinary after all. But you know, the people who knew the Kennedys wrote a very different kind of letter from the people who didn't, and those who didn't tended to introduce themselves, to talk more about their lives, and how they saw the country, and thus, you know, were far more compelling to me.
One of the ones that you printed out was from Monroe Young Jr. III.
Mm-hmm.
He said, some mean man killed my daddy, too, here in Dallas.
Yes. He was just a young boy, and it's interesting in terms of his letter because Mrs. Kennedy did not personally answer any of these letters, to my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone got these black-bordered acknowledgement cards. But in this instance, Monroe Young Jr., he enclosed a picture of himself,
mm-hmm.
and on the back of it, he put his birth date. And his letter, in fact, was answered by Mrs. Kennedy's secretary, who said, Mrs. Kennedy wanted me to thank you for your letter, and she notes that you have a birthday coming up, and she wanted to wish you a happy birthday.
We just have a few seconds, but Ellen Fitzpatrick, I wondered, you wrote that few of the letter writers, or at least among those that were saved, expressed much curiosity about the assassination itself.
Yes. You know, Oswald was arrested so quickly after the Kennedy assassination that I found it very interesting that very few people seemed either interested in or in doubt about what lay behind the assassination. These ideas developed in due course of time, and mm-hmm. there have been thousands of books written about what really lay behind the Kennedy assassination. I find it so fascinating because so many of these books are very speculative, of course. We don't actually know all the details and perhaps never will. But something that we could know, that is, how this event impacted the American people, just was largely left unexplored in the way these letters reveal for almost 50 years.
Until now. And Ellen Fitzpatrick, thank you for the book, Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation, and thanks for joining us as well.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
We're out of time. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.